Hello out there to all you people on the go and multitaskers everywhere. This is Homeschool Mom Movie Maven, and this review is on John Wick, the first chapter. The John Wick franchise is an ultra-violent set of movies which skates on a thin excuse for revenge to create large piles of dead bodies. Who should go? Adults only, and then only those with a stomach for violence. There are scenes of intense weapon and martial art combat lethal force and extreme language. Its only virtues are a minimal amount of sexuality, mostly limited to bikini-clad escorts, and the fact that the protagonist is a devoted and faithful, albeit grieving, husband. The long take. I know I'm probably the last one on the train here with John Wick from 2014, as it has been out so long there is now a third installment. Having just seen the first one, and with the John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum in theaters, I felt compelled to make some comments about the origin story. And here I'd like to mention there are going to be spoilers for John Wick, Turner and Hooch, A Dog's Purpose, and Marley and Me. The premise, in case you have been on a prolonged abstinence from movies, is that a retired assassin goes on a massive killing spree after someone shoots his dog. Now, there is more to it than that, but that is what it boils down to. John Wick verges on, if is not steeped in, what one might label as violence porn. By that, I mean senseless and gratuitous violence for the purpose of cathartic schadenfreude, brutality, though of a certain attractive elegance which takes itself way too seriously. Don't get me wrong, I am sympathetic to Wick's righteous anger over the unnecessary killing of a puppy. As I have mentioned before in other posts, while I can tolerate an awful lot of violence in an action movie, I cringe at the thought of something happening to the dog during the movie. That point has actually prevented me from ever watching a couple of movies, including, okay, and here where the spoilers come in, Turner and Hooch and Marley and Me. I have even been putting off watching A Dog's Purpose, even though the dog gets reincarnated multiple times, because I know the viewing will require a couple of boxes of Kleenex, even though I don't have a cold. My point being, from a cinematic point of view, I am quite simpatico with the lead, whose motivation, which propels the entire running time, is the death of his dog. However, even by my rather indulgent parameters of an average action movie, wherein the protagonist is given nothing to lose, I could not help but yell at the screen occasionally, wondering why his opponents did not handle the situation quite differently. The mutt murderer was Yosef, played by Alfie Allen, best known as Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones. The son, Yosef is the son of Jon's previous employer, Viggo, who is in turn a Russian mafia don, who is played by Michael Nyquist from Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and the Naomi Rapace version of the Dragon Tattoo Girl franchise. Yosef had come to steal John's hot car, and the dog just got in the way. As Viggo, the Slavic Vito Corleone, points out, it was just bad luck that brought them back together in this way. But a little common sense and a teensy bit of courtesy could have mitigated the situation if not established an easy detente. Of course, there wouldn't have been a movie, but, you know. The dog was the last gift from John's dying wife. From the reaction of wiser heads than the aforementioned Yosef, the dog dispatcher, everyone else in the movie knew about this and what the legendary assassin John's response was likely to be. A hitman with nothing to lose and a lot of grief anger to expend as a recipe for a bloodbath. Therefore, I thought, logically, sensibly, had I been Viggo, and keep in mind I am stepping into the shoes of a mafia don, I would have arrived with a new car, a new dog, a profuse apology, a chastised son maybe having endured a beating with a black eye, and an offer to set up an entire charity animal hospital in the name of his deceased wife. Instead, Viggo, knowing his son was stupidly in the wrong, as evidenced by the beating he did give him, puts a contract out on John Wick, the man to whom he himself refers as the best of the best, the one who was called Baba Yaga, not because he was the boogeyman, but because he was the one you sent out to kill the boogeyman. This is a guaranteed plan for failure, and Viggo's downfall hereafter is from criminal, if you'll excuse the pun, stupidity. I couldn't help but think of Hawkeye and Thor. Watching Thor dispatch agent after agent in Thor's path toward Mjolnir in the first origin movie, Thor, Hawkeye quips to Coulson, "Do you want me to take him down, or would you rather send in more guys for him to beat up?" Because that is what Viggo does. He sends in squad after squad to kill this unkillable killing machine. Vigo's men are about as effective as stormtroopers, and were this a video game, John would have had the high score. But why? Vigo is an intelligent man who wouldn't have been able to create and keep his empire. He must have seen the results of his decreasing returns, and no explanation is given as to why he would commit his entire army in a fruitless and hopeless effort to take out the one man he knows he cannot defeat, especially when it seems obvious to me there were alternatives. It's not even that Vigo is so committed to the protection of his son. Vigo doesn't like or love his son, and Vigo ultimately gives Yosef up to Wick as bait to save his own skin. 90% of the movie is John's body count, which quickly exceeds the opening scene, Saving Private Ryan. I get the use of the MacGuffin. I even get stories where you put the protagonist in a corner with nothing to lose and watch them fight their way out. Movie franchises like Taken, Die Hard, and Jack Reacher, and even a few of the James Bonds are good examples of a protagonist who resolve knotty conundrums with fists and firefights. And I am the first to admit that they are guilty pleasures, but the motivations are usually more compelling, as in protection of a vulnerable family member, a national danger, or the righting of a grave injustice. And the protagonist usually is witty, relieving the unremitting gore and violence a bit with dry one-liners. But despite the fact I have often maintained that Keanu Reeves has missed his calling as a comedian, Reeves' Wick parkours his way through the movie on the backs of dead bodies with the somber deadpan of a mini Lurch from the Addams Family. Don't get me wrong, I like Keanu Reeves. I just wish someone would do something with him which entails more expression. When I refer to Keanu Reeves' comedies, I'm not talking about the unintentionally so bad they are funny, like Constantine, his insult to the classic Day the Earth Stood Still. Nor am I referring to his well-done stint as the singular dry villain in Branagh's Shakespearean comedy Much Ado About Nothing. I'm talking about Reeves' roles in legitimate comedies. If you are unfamiliar with Keanu Reeves' comedies, or if you are surprised that he even was in them, I recommend the slapstick-ridiculous Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and the wryly observant ensemble piece Parenthood. Both are for an older crowd, though. Keanu Reeves can really be amusing and cute with good timing. And while I'm not suggesting that a former assassin who has just lost his wife to cancer and his dog to a home invasion should be lighthearted, John Wick is unrelentingly grim, where it perhaps did not have to be. I mean, Wick is supposed to be human, right? I have often maintained that the best love action films often have a sense of their own humor. Good examples are Jaws, in the scene where they are all comparing scars, Aliens, only the second one is, the first and third are even grimmer than John Wick, and the fourth one is simply best ignored. There were a number of little one-liners. Paul Reiser is a comedian, was in there, and threw a few one-liners in there. And all the Die Hard movies. I mean, Bruce Willis is extremely well-known for that. Tongue is planted occasionally, but firmly in cheek, and there's an awareness in the script of its own cliched vulnerability. But John Wick's level of constant violence with no emotional offsetting balance is just exhausting. The cinematic atmosphere is dark and poetically sympathetic, as most of the movie takes place in dark interiors, at night, or in conjunction with bad weather. There is an interesting juxtaposition with another film I have previously reviewed, which does have a sense of humor, called Hotel Artemis. Much of the third act of John Wick's takes place in The Continental, a hotel renowned as a high-class refuge for people in John Wick's line of work. Like the Hotel Artemis, which was a hospital for the underworld with questionable aesthetics, The Continental has a primary rule as well. It's pretty much the same one: you are not supposed to kill any of the other guests. A certain neutrality is supposed to be enforced there amongst society's lethal predators. These two, the titular Hotel Artemis and the Continental in John Wick, exist in a consistent universe where you could put them on a double bill or even together in the same movie. But Hotel Artemis, unlike John Wick, has a heart and knows when to recognize the grin in even the darkest human comedy, and is a far better movie for it. Small parts and cameos from the action-adventure pool abound in Wick, from both TV and film. Ian McShane, who has added his talents to everything from Westerns to British and American cop shows to the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, plays the owner of the Continental. Willem Dafoe, who has appeared in movies as divergent as Platoon and Spider-Man 3, is a mysterious colleague-slash-competitor. Adrian Pilecki, most notably the indomitable agent Bobby Hunter in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Kelly Grayson in The Orville, is Perkins, a female assassin. Lance Reddick from Fringe and Blacklist is Sharon, the concierge of the Continental. And interesting to note that Sharon is mythologically traditionally the name of the three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell, interestingly enough. John Leguizamo from Executive Decision and Baz Luhrmann's ultra-violent version of Romeo and Juliet is Aurelio, the chop shop owner to whom Joseph brings Wick's stolen car, and who is the first to clue Joseph into his mistake with a punch in the mouth. There are so many cameos from the action-adventure genre that I would not have been surprised to see Samuel L. Jackson show up, but sadly that was not to be. The acting is good, and the shoot-em-up bang-bang with combined martial arts is well choreographed and interesting as Wick dispatches his targets with precision and no innocent bystanders to the count. Wick is obviously an anti-hero with a ledger redder than Black Widow's. As action-adventures go, it was brainless fun and emotionally cathartic to watch a bunch of bad guys being blown away with incredible efficiency and expertise by another, but sympathetic, or at least more sympathetic, bad guy. It is always a pleasure of sorts to see anyone do their job with such skill and excellence, whether they are a pastry chef, a ghost hunter, or a paid assassin. But still, I couldn't help perseverate on the plot point of the missing opportunity to mitigate. Had Vigo, remember him, the mafia boss guy whose son started this whole mess, if Vigo had tried to placate Wick but been rebuffed, I would have found the scenario far more believable, at least within the universe of that genre. Then it would have made more sense for Vigo to throw everything at John Wick that he could. But what I truly do not understand is how the filmmakers can justify one sequel, much less two. I mean, in the first one, John kills everybody. And I wonder about the movie's core worldview. Joseph, for all his being a completely cruel jerk, was not responsible for the death of John's wife, nor did he attempt to kill John. Therefore, John's reaction to the theft of his car and slaughter of his puppy without at least an attempt at peaceful and equivocal recompense to me seemed over the top, even for this kind of movie, making it hard for me to empathize with a protagonist who creates this much mayhem. Compared to similarly set up movies like the aforementioned Die Hard, Taken, or from a huge variety of styles, where the protagonist goes on a mission to avenge a terrible wrong with extreme prejudice like True Grit, Death Wish, The Count of Monte Cristo, or Dirty Harry, even for me, even for this genre of movie, John's reaction was too extreme and with insufficient reasonable motivation, making this a, if you'll excuse another pun, fatally flawed story. And FYI, Schadenfreude, if you're not familiar with it, is a German word for which there is no English equivalent, meaning pleasure derived from someone else's misfortune. And remember, if you're listening in on your car or on an iPhone, you can get the full original review, including pictures and links, at www.homeschoolmommoviemaven, that's Maven spelled with an I, MAVIN.com. And take it from a homeschool mom, education doesn't always have to come from a book. Sometimes it can come from analyzing what's wrong with a popular culture icon.